The Lord of the Rings is, by any yardstick, an international cultural phenomenon. J.R.R. Tolkien's epic trilogy of fantasy novels has sold 100 million copies around the world. Peter Jackson's film adaptations have grossed more than $3 billion. Now a splashy stage version is about to open in Toronto. Can this massive story really fit on a stage? Jeff London has this report.
Hobbits, elves, wizards, orcs, they're all on the enormous revolving stage of the Princess of Wales Theatre in Toronto, and some of them even sing. Just don't call The Lord of the Rings a musical, says producer Kevin Wallace.
We haven't set out to create a musical of The Lord of the Rings, a play of The Lord of the Rings, or a spectacle of Lord of the Rings. It is a hybrid production, because this is not any of those things singularly. It is all of those things.
Director and co-adapter Matthew Warchus describes it this way.
It's probably useful in terms of the music to think about what it would be like to see a Shakespeare play and a Cirque du Soleil show sort of woven together.
And, says composer Christopher Nightingale,
it was very, very hard to find a definition for us, actually. And it's not fair to say that we are a play with music, and it's not fair to say that we're a musical in the traditional sense. But with something in the middle, I don't know quite what it is.
Whatever it is, at a cost of $28 million Canadian, $24.25 million American, the stage adaptation of The Lord of the Rings is the most expensive theater production ever. There's a cast of 55, an orchestra of 18, a set with a turntable and 17 elevators. Tree roots from the proscenium arch envelop the auditorium. Actors fly and appear on stilts 10 feet high. There's even a massive puppet spider. Producer Kevin Wallace says the show's gargantuan budget has allowed its creators to bring their fantasies to life.
That's exciting, of course, in terms of what you can do. And in terms of the scale of the production and the thrill that you can give an audience with some of the extraordinary creatures that we've been able to create. The fact is that ultimately it's got to do with the story. And if you are emotionally engaged in the characters, that's where the heart of the experience lies.
And the story, a tale of good versus evil laced with magic, is, well, epic. When director Matthew Warchus was first approached about working on The Lord of the Rings, he wasn't convinced that Tolkien's 1,000 pages of text could work on stage.
Initially, I was extremely skeptical. It seemed problematic in almost every respect, the size of the story, the type of story it is, all those different locations, the scale of the events that happen, the fights, the landscapes, the different species.
But, he says, as he reread The Lord of the Rings, he began to see ways Middle-earth could come to life theatrically.
I was very surprised to find, first of all, that the book is full of music. People keep bursting into song. There are anthems and prayers and old songs and traditional songs. So the idea of doing it with music on a stage seemed like that would be a good idea.
The score, like the show itself, is a hybrid. It functions more like a movie soundtrack. Some of the music is by Vartina, a Finnish contemporary folk group. Some of it is by A.R. Rahman, the legendary Bollywood composer. And some of it is by Christopher Nightingale, an English composer who serves as the production's musical supervisor.
I've described myself in the past as glue. I try to referee the different musical ideas and try and chair it. So my contribution is sort of threaded through the whole show.
Producer Kevin Wallace initially wanted to open The Lord of the Rings in London, but couldn't find a large enough theater available. So he looked across the Atlantic. Until recently, Toronto had been a boom town for commercial theater, with long-running hit shows like The Lion King and Mamma Mia. But Toronto star critic Richard Uzunian says the landscape quickly changed.
In the middle of that came 9/11, came SARS, came also a kind of a decline in tourism to Canada. A lot of things did it. The value of the dollar, the increased security at the borders after 9/11, this no longer became quite as friendly a place to visit.
Hungry for a new hit, several Canadian producers convinced Kevin Wallace to present the show in Toronto, and they even convinced the Ontario government to invest $3 million. Deputy Minister of Tourism Bill Allen says the financial risk is worth it.
And even if we don't get our $3 million back, we see recouping more than that through the spin-off effects, the taxes from wages, from ticket sales, from restaurant sales, and so on.
A production is scheduled to open in London next fall, and Broadway may not see The Lord of the Rings for years. Right now, the only place to see the 3.5-hour show is in Toronto. Critic Richard Uzunian hasn't seen it yet, but he's been following the buzz on the internet.
What I find fascinating is I've been going on blog sites and websites to read what people think of it, and it's always a two-part thing. It's, hey, we love Toronto. What a cool city. I'd never been here before. I did this. I loved it. And then we saw Lord of the Rings, and depending on who you read, they either loved it or hated it. But the city's been getting very good notices, which was part of the idea.
The Lord of the Rings officially opens on Thursday, March 23rd. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London.
From NPR News, this is Morning Edition. Kevin Langley is our supervising engineer. Our technical director is Arthur Halliday-Laurent. Audio engineers include Stacey Abbott, Brian Jarbo, Vince Muse, Gary Henderson, Dennis Nielsen, Mark Greenhouse, Renee Pringle, and Ivan Burketh, with Patrick Murray here at NPR West. Our series This, I Believe, is independently produced by Dan Gettleman with John Gregory. Our senior editor is Bruce Oster. Our executive producer is Ellen McDonald. Morning Edition's theme music was written by B.J. Lederman and arranged by Jim Pugh. I'm Renee Montaigne.